Hey, I'm Heather, a chaos coordinator and mom of three young kids. Chaos and cookies is literally my life, with never-ending dishes, laundry, you name it. Being a mom is a blessing, but it also comes with hard days too. Together, we can find the humor and real solutions to lighten your load and clean up the crumbs. You're listening to the Chaos and Cookies Podcast. Hello, hello, and welcome back to another episode of the Chaos and Cookies Podcast. I have another great National Geographic writer and editor for us today. This is a super cool book. It's called Here, Not There. It's got 100 unexpected travel destinations. So it gives you alternatives like take a tour of Portugal's Azores rather than the Hawaiian Islands for flora, fauna, and underwater adventures. So it gives you a lot of different alternates, which I think is super cool. It goes all over the world. And we are being joined by award-winning writer and editor for National Geographic Traveler, Andrew Nelson. And we're going to discuss this newest project here. Both surprising and inspiring, the book offers undreamed of destinations to help design a truly unique vacation with 100 intriguing alternatives to more predictable, expensive, and overcrowded destinations. Andrew Nelson has roamed all 50 states as well as numerous countries for the magazine and the website, and he served as the director of editorial projects for National Geographic Travel in Washington, D.C., and has taught in institutions such as Loyola University New Orleans and the College of Charleston, and he currently lives in Washington, D.C. Please welcome Andrew Nelson to the podcast. Thank you for being here, Andrew. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you, Heather. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. I'm excited to talk about your new book, Here, Not There. Hey, when you can go off the beaten path and not have to go with like the crowds, I'm all for it. But before we dive in, I'm going to ask you an icebreaker for
sure, I guess,
which is what is your favorite cookie and or cookie memory?
Well, I will tell you, my favorite cookie is a Christmas cookie called Peppercocker, which I don't know if too many people know, but it is a very thin, crisp cookie that is very hard to roll out, but it's ginger. It's like a ginger snap with molasses and ginger. It traditionally has been German and in the Scandinavian countries. And the trick to it is to roll the dough out so smoothly, so it's paper thin, because the taste, it's that ginger taste with a little crisp snap. So my mom used to make it every Christmas, and we just loved it as a family, and we always talked about my mom's Peppercocker. As a matter of fact, a restaurant once called her and she gave them the recipe. So they used it, but, she's still with us. She's 95, but she's not baking anymore. But, my niece and my brother, actually have now taken over the tradition. So that's my favorite cookie memory, is waiting for the Peppercocker to come out of the oven.
They're like really good fresh out of the oven then.
Yes. Well, you have to let them cool. And that was always hard because the kids would always sneak up on the table and, and get their fingers a little scorched. But
who's sneaking?
Many happy memories. Yeah. That's what Peppercocker means to me.
Well, that is awesome. That's the first one I've had of that kind, actually.
Oh, great. Yeah. Look it up. Yeah.
Well, you can probably buy something similar in the stores that are probably like, are they more in like a cylinder type package?
Yeah, you can see them, but they're never as good, right, as if they're homemade. And, and I think, Cocker is like a cracker. It's almost, and I don't know if that's Swedish or Danish. And I think the pepper just comes because it's got a little kick to it, because it's ginger.
Right.
So there's a little kick, which is kind of nice.
Very cool. Well, thank you for that.
You're welcome.
I like those little Biscoffs. Those are kind of like the most ginger, but ginger.
Yeah, these are thinner, but yeah, that's why you fly American Airlines, right?
Right.
That's where you get them. Listen, I always get them for two because I always like take one, put one in my pocket because you never know when you're traveling, when you might need something. So if ever anybody's giving away Clif Bars or something, I will grab some, and I keep Clif Bars in my carry-on and my roller bag, and because you just never know.
No, you
I've
never
been
know.
Delayed. I've been delayed long enough to know that. So,
do you have a favorite airline that you like to fly?
Well, you know, it's kind of interesting, Heather. I am right now. I'm loyal to American because American flies in and out of Charleston, where I'm currently based, and because I've got status with them, so that's always helpful. There's all, you know,
I have to ask before you go there. Did you have the when they merged? Did you have the issue with your status?
No, I didn't have the issue because I didn't fly with the other one. Who was the, I forgot who they merged with, but I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
American Airlines and US Airways.
US Airways. No, I did not have.
My ex-husband used to fly US Airways all the time.
Yeah. So, and they're no longer flying. So, so that's, you know who I've been flying recently, which I really am surprised at how much I enjoyed it, was Breeze Airlines.
Breeze.
So Breeze, I don't know if you've heard it. You tell me you were based where?
I'm in Texas. So we
in Texas. So yeah. So Southwest is the big local regional air carrier in Texas, but Breeze has just started up and I can fly to Charleston to New Orleans, my old hometown. I flew there for $70 return.
Nice.
I know. So it's really kind of a nice little airline. I know my brother's family just flew into New Haven from Raleigh. So they have these sort of obscure nonstops, which is really, really great. And I just think it was a pleasant experience. It wasn't like you usually hear horror stories about economy airlines, and this was quite pleasant.
Yeah, so, it's a pretty short trip too, you know. I flew Allegiant to Vegas, and it's on a separate terminal from the main one in Austin Bergstrom. But when we went to Vegas, because we were like, okay, like this is kind of weird. But when we got to Vegas, they have Allegiant Stadium. So it's like, okay, it's not this rinky dink, just Austin. It's just like it's redheaded stepchild. Just you're gonna go over there and drive a separate way. And I preferred it. It wasn't as crowded.
Well, I mean, and then airports, so you can get me started on those. But the two airports that I think are really surprising, Palm Springs Airport, because it's all outside.
Oh.
So it's because the weather's always usually nice, or it gets hot in the summer. But that's kind of cool because you land, you pull out, and then you walk and you're outside, and you walk through the gate, you walk through the little lobby, and then you're out. Yeah. And around, and then Changi Airport in Singapore. So I've never been in a place that you go through customs so quickly. As a matter of fact, they have after dinner mints on the customs table, on the customs ledge. So, you know, you got the guy in the uniform and they're looking at you, and then there's a little, it's like a hotel, or, you know, it was just so fast and so efficient.
Interesting.
So, yeah. And they pride themselves on that. And it just, you know, you'll never look at our immigration or reentry procedures again, you know, because it feels like you're in Ellis Island, right?
Oh, my gosh. I got detained in Miami once and it was awful. I used to live in Tampa for 11 years, went to school out there, and Tampa Airport was awesome. Super easy.
As a matter of fact, I remember that. Yeah. It was an easy airport. Yeah.
It's a very easy, take a train, red or green or red or blue. And then I've also been to like State College, which is like one gate.
Yeah,
or Erie,
exactly.
Pennsylvania, like four gates. So, and then you got like the big ones that are awful. But I think that comes with travel. And
yes.
Do you recommend preparing beforehand, obviously, for like airports where you're going, especially if you're not familiar?
Yeah, well, I think it's always good, especially if you're changing planes, it's always good to look at the diagram. Sometimes, you know, these days they have them in the apps. Sometimes they provide them if there's an in-flight magazine that's still left. And it's great. Charlotte Airport, for example, is just,
it's got airport.
A horrendous difference, a distance. You have to, you know, you're cutting it close. I once was running from saw somebody I hadn't seen, an old colleague. And I'm like, I can. He was running the other way. We're both like, we have to get the other side of the airport. And with Charlotte, that's always the case. So
and DFW.
Yeah, too. DFW, yes. The sort of that donut thing. I don't know what they did in the early 1960s, but it just didn't work. That ABC, you know, it looked like the Olympic rings you were going through,
yeah,
Dallas.
I agree. You know? Yep, I agree.
So I, you know, airports are, I have yet to have one that I really find interesting. So, I mean, in the sense of, I want to spend way more time there than I actually, you know, and then just getting in and getting out. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh. And then you've got those airports that you like, these other countries that you can like walk down on the tarmac. Like everything's super different. And I'm sure you experienced that. Did you go to all of these places in your book?
No, I'd say this was formulated during COVID. So
oh,
we couldn't. But what you have to remember is that Nat Geo people like to hang out together and they like to talk. So
collaboration.
So a lot of these were places I'd been, places I'd wanted to go, places people told me I should go. So I always listen. It's if you can get a bunch of Nat Geo people together, you'd be surprised at some of the information that you get, because they're always have some incredibly wonderful stories to tell and to talk about. So their dinner parties are really interesting.
Oh yeah, I bet. I love interviewing you guys. And typically I'm not going to ask you like, what's your favorite place you've been? Cause it's all different. It depends on if it's a mountain or if it's a beach or if it's a this or that. Right.
Yeah.
So
you get it.
I want to know if, like, for instance, on the back, it says like, go to Portugal instead of Hawaii. Did you also do the comparison of pricing from one and the other?
No, I didn't do comparison of date. First of all, because prices were changing. As you know, one of the things that was going on in the last couple of years is that inflation was going way up. And so that was one of the reasons, you know, I would write the book. But it seemed like after COVID, all of us had a collective case of FOMO, the entire country. So all of a sudden, every place that was an iconic destination, like the Colosseum in Rome, the Great Smoky Mountains, Hollywood, just seems so crowded and so hard. And when you waited online, and when you got online and you got in, and then you found out the prices had just skyrocketed. So Myrtle Beach, which is great for families, got a little more expensive, you know, for families. So, you know, it's that those sorts of things. So, you know, that was one, that was another reason. But it also, you know, at National Geographic, we really are concerned about over tourism and how it impacts the environment that we all live in, and how it impacts the destination. So because we've unfortunately discovered we can love places too much.
Yeah.
So this
it's
was a way
to say that, because when I went to Bermuda, there was a lot of British people because it's a British island.
Yeah.
And I was talking to a older couple on the beach, and they had said that I was just like, you don't really see this promoted. And they go, we do that on purpose. We don't want you here. Like, this is UK's Caribbean. Like, we like it quiet. So they were very protective, and they could tell that they come all the time. And you could just tell that they were like, we don't want it overly saturated. I know it's good for the economy, but we like the quiet.
Well, and that's always the balance, right? That's something that, I was concerned about. So one of the things I thought is, if I could redirect Americans to less visited places, or anybody that contains some of the same attributes as the more crowded ones, you know, both the planet and my travelers would win. It would be a win-win for everybody. And, you know, it's something I don't... You got to understand, I'm not throwing shade on any longstanding travel icons.
Yeah. But
I'm
spice
somebody,
it up. Be different.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, it's this sort of thing where, you know, we're always going to have Paris and Yellowstone and Hollywood and the Everglades. Everyone must see these places, and they will. But I thought, you know, This is about thinking out of the box. So if you think of this, it's an exercise, Heather, in thinking out of the box.
Yeah.
So I want somebody to buy this book, curl up, flip through it, be inspired. Maybe places they never think of going. Great. You know, maybe you want to. There may be other places that, you know, that's not for me. But they're also, I'm hoping, they kind of look at places that they might want to go to and think, oh, it's got the same attributes as this place or that place. So, a good example of that is when you think of, let's say Amsterdam, what do you think of?
Right, the big buildings and the,
Yeah.
I mean,
so
I'm
think
Jewish,
of,
so I think also, like, there's very heavy, like, there's Holocaust museums and, like, a lot of those types of places, World War II.
Exactly. So the thing is that I do think that you think of that, you think of Anne Frank, you think of canals, you think of bicycles. So if you take the most obvious thing, canals and bikes, right? You know, those beautiful canals, and everybody's biking in Holland, right? So well, there is a city in the United States that has canals with great biking, great urban downtown biking. It's Indianapolis. Okay. They've taken their downtown grid and they've separated the bike lanes with landscape medians so that you can go anywhere downtown on a bike and you can take your bike and go down, and go down to these canals. And then you can go on the canals to more bike trails that go for like 17 miles. And who knew, right? So an entire family.
But do you get the same? It's obviously not the same ambiance because it's not Holland.
Right. But you get an urban biking experience. Now, granted, nobody's wearing wooden clogs or, they do have a lot of tulips. But the idea is that it's possible to have an urban adventure without needing a car. And for, parents with some kids who have all that energy to burn, they can ride bikes. It's great. Also, Indianapolis has the largest children's museum in the world.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting. I mean, it's a major city.
Right. And there's great food because guess what's around Indianapolis? Farms. Guess what farms raise? Food. So the farm to table stuff is kind of off the hook in Indy.
Oh, I
So,
bet.
Yeah. So, and it's
Still
not that
America.
expensive. Right. It's not that expensive, Heather.
You don't need a passport to get there.
No. And you don't need the $700 per person plane ticket either.
Right.
So
all the taxes and fees in the big bags, right?
Yeah,
and
but the coolest thing I think for kids is that they can stay in an old Coca-Cola bottling factory as a hotel.
That's
They have this
cool.
very, because it's called the Bottle Works, and it's in the Bottle Works neighborhood. But it was the old Coca-Cola bottling plant. And was done in the 1930s. So it's got that great Art Deco look to it. It's a lot of fun. So
I think that's, I mean, every city's got its own, like, I had this conversation with Joe about the food. Like, everyone has their beaten path go-tos, not really just the stuff you see on Food Network and all the awards. You want, like, the hole in the walls. So
yeah.
I feel like everyone's got that with all this, like, all those cities have its own, like, zhuzh.
Yeah. No, I mean, and I think this is one of the things I want people to do. You know, National Geographic believes everybody can be an explorer. A 5-year-old can be an explorer. A mom with two, preschoolers can be an explorer. Your dad with the dad bod can be an explorer. You don't have to be Indiana Jones, right? You're not going to have to scale mountains or slash through jungles. Exploring means meeting people where they are in the culture where they're in and appreciating our differences. So this is what's so important. So it means that you can be put in a situation that you don't know anything about and you have been in a place you've never been. You're exploring. It doesn't matter if it's Indianapolis or India.
Right.
Yeah. So
now, is there anywhere that you... I have puppies, so for this chaos area, that's what you're hearing, by the way.
Oh, that's okay. I had friends walk by the podcast as a window, and they were like waving like me, and I didn't want to wave and break the fourth wall. Oh, well, they're
it's
gone
all good.
Now.
I've got a 4-month-old puppy and a 10-month-old, and they're using the hardest things you could possibly do with the hardwood. That's what you're
hearing.
Gosh,
I should have invited Kim in because she was the publisher of National Geographic.
Oh, is it what's
Conahan.
Kim's last name?
Conahan.
I might have met her before. I have interviewed all of you guys so many times.
Oh, okay.
Amazing. I no, it's fine. Kim, come on in.
Well, I think she's here with her daughter. So I had her daughter
Good.
come to, I had her daughter who's just getting a, she does publicity for hotels.
Oh.
And I had her daughter, she graduated from Indiana 2 years ago. And I teach a class on placemaking and the narrative of place here at the College of Charleston. So my
Placemaking,
student,
like,
how do you talk about place? How do you make a place something
okay.
that's interesting and how people
Thought
want
maybe
why they want
setting
to visit
tables.
it?
I was like setting
No.
plate, like place settings.
No, 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 no. It's not places like place as a physical place like Charleston. And of course, Charleston's a great place for that, Heather, because the students walk outside and they're right in the middle of the Petri dish. It's this historic city filled full of church spires and old buildings and
So pretty.
lots of great shopping. Yeah. If you have you have you ever been?
I have. So when I was a kid, my parents emphasized travel in us young. And so
Okay.
we had this old, I call it Wonder Wagon. It's not really, but it looks like a Wonder Wagon. It's that Toyota
Yeah.
big gray van. And we would road trip it every summer. My parents are from New York. I was born and raised in Texas. I also went to school in Florida, so I drove there to
Yeah.
go back and forth. But we would drive to the Cape Cod most summers. And on the way, my dad is a history
Oh,
major.
he's
So
a big, okay.
been to every battleship you have ever known. I have been to every battleship, war museum,
Oh, I can imagine.
boats, oh, everywhere. Coin mints, because he's a coin
Oh, so you've been to all
just
the mints. Okay, the US mints and the.
Philadelphia, and then I can also look through a loop and find in deformities in the coins, and if it was double stamped, it has an
Oh,
extra
wow.
weight, like it's all the things. So we would drive up and hit all these places on the way to the Cape. We'd rent a house at Cape Cod, and all of our family would come from Massachusetts and New York and Rhode Island, and then we would hump it back, and then we did Yellowstone, and I've been to every almost just about every state in the country. And so we would road trip it. So we'd stop at all these places, and Charleston was one. And I
Yeah.
would get a charm on my charm bracelet from all the places we'd stayed. So it's like going, like, I've got Mount Vernon and Statue of
Yeah.
Liberty. And, I've got a little horse from Sweden. I've been there because we had exchange students growing up. So I've been over there. So it's travel's great. It's
Yeah.
expensive, unfortunately. I have three small kids. I'd love to be able to travel with them more, but I think it's just expensive right now to do that with
Yeah.
anything. But experience and memories. I
Yeah.
have a 6-year-old. I'm in the car for more than 20 minutes with this child, and he's like, "Are we there? Are we almost there?" I'm like, "We would die if
Right.
we were going further than like downtown." Like, what would we do if we went to California? Because we're talking about going to these things, they're starting to ask to go places. I'm like, we could fly because it's faster, but you
Right.
also see more in the car. But they have
Right.
TVs and all, like, so it's not back in the day where you have license plate games and slug bugs, and because you don't even see those anymore.
Right. Well, they're just all glued to their screens.
I know, and they're young, so I limit it. But Charleston's beautiful. I was thinking about going to Hilton Head or in that area
Yeah.
maybe soon. It's kid
Well, and
friendly.
I think that's part of when you travel with kids, they are as you said, they have a low attention span. So one of the things to do is to find a place where there's a new thing to do every 2 hours.
Yeah.
So which involves some research, but you can do that. That's easy. You make a loop. So before the kids realize it, they've completely circled around back to the airport. Because kids love, older kids, not, infants, but they usually are so engrossed with the idea of flying. They think it's cool that, that's okay. And then once you get them, just 2 hours from the airport, first destination, 2 hours to the next destination, you can make it as long or as short as you want, depending on your time. But I think that gives kids, that sort of sense. Or just do, things that are, find a central location and then do a starburst pattern, right? To one here, one day, and then you're back and you have the same hotel. Obviously, it must have a pool, correct?
Oh, yes,
for kids.
Sure.
Yeah. So,
absolutely. Like, I'm trying to find a good beach. So when this came, I was like, is there anything that we could do?
Well, let me suggest for you Florida's Space Coast. So the Space Coast of Florida, it is
St. Augustine.
More, well, further south, it's more educational than I think a lot of places, because the Kennedy Space Center is there. And I don't know, how do you have boys or girls? And it shouldn't matter, but it seems like
I have two boys and a girl in the middle. I went to NASA because I grew up in Houston. So I've been to NASA, but I never went to Kennedy, but you could see it when I was in Tampa when they would do launches and things.
Yeah. Well, so that side of it, I mean, you know, they've got, then, you know, they have the typical Florida stuff like Cocoa Beach and, you know, golf and gator, you know, or that, you know, this kind of thing with miniature golf with a little alligator. So that'll keep them busy. But there are interesting small places there, like the Warbird Museum, which is literally war birds, like flyers, rare flyers and prop planes. So if you've got a kid who's into that, and then the American Space Museum, there is even a giant Buddha. So Buddhists have erected a sort of a Buddhist temple sanctuary called the White Sands Buddhist Center. And I think it's in Mims. So that's great. There's some really interesting exhibition and museum of a couple who fought segregation and experienced, they were attacked by the Ku Klux Klan, but they were both teachers. So, but it's a very inspiring story, especially for young people, because they can identify with teachers, and it sort of teaches the lesson of, you know, speaking up when things are wrong. And so that's great. And then, of course, the Kennedy, there's Cape Canaveral, the National Seashore, Cape Canaveral National Seashore, which isn't built on. It's wild Florida. And then, of course, you've got Black Point. There's the whole wildlife drive down through those areas. And then my favorite is the Brevard Zoo in Melbourne, Florida, because you can approach the animals on kayaks.
Oh, I had heard that, but I never experienced it.
Yeah. So it's really interesting. So you're not going to be going to the lions that way, but, you know, lemurs, giraffes, rhinos. So
Sweden has a zoo like that. In Sweden, we went when I was a kid and the lemurs were out and I was like, where's the cages?
Yeah. So, So, but again, kids love it. So it's this combination of fun, sand, sun, surf, and
beautiful
and rockets.
Right, absolutely. My nephew is huge into space. I live in Austin. I grew up I'm gonna say like a beach snob, because my parents are from Long Island, New York, so we would beach up there, or we go to Florida, whatever. And I then went to college in Florida, which I can tell you I went to the beach maybe 5 times in the 11 years I was there. Like, you just, the crowds. But the beach here where my friends would go when they went to college and stayed in town, Port Aransas, South Padre.
Yeah, Padre. Yeah.
Gross water. It is. It's gold. Yeah. It's brown. You get tar. It's gross. It's a beach. My kids are like, it's fun. They don't know. But I'm like, I'd like to go to like a nicer beach, Orange Beach and Alabama Shores, I think, is more the off, like, beaten path, maybe more so than going to Florida or Pensacola.
Yeah, those are they're called the sugary white sand beaches, and they are like sugar. That is true. So, and that water is like bottle green, you know, it's beautiful against the white sand. It's gorgeous. So that's another place. I think a lot of people know Croatia has become quite popular, but the country just below it, Montenegro, is another great, it's cheaper, less crowded. Now, you sometimes sacrifice sort of, I would say comfort, you know, sometimes it can be a little primitive, but not terrible.
Is safety usually a problem when you're moving?
Well, I think, you know, it's interesting, because this is where you get into a discussion about safety when traveling. And, you know, I've discovered in my experience, guys never bring it up. Women always bring it up. And we know why, you know, women, I was astounded when a woman friend of mine told me how she books hotel rooms and what, where she stays away from. She books closer to the elevators, not towards emergency stairwells, where that she thinks, you know, so I, that stuff guys never think about. They
There's
never
tricks
think
too
about
that.
That
you can do with the hotels and the locks and how to make sure they can't take the locks off. And there's all of these TikToks on how you can lock your room more so.
Yeah. Yeah. I get, and I think that's really of interest, to, especially to women, and for good reason. You know, I mean, sometimes the perception is that they're more at risk, right? And then I just think, you know, again, that's one of the things that I always, and I don't know why I'm surprised about it, but, you know, if there's one thing the Me Too movement did was sort of enlighten guys to sometimes what women go through, right? Especially, you know, and in foreign cultures, it's always a cultural clash.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, there are some countries in Eastern Europe where women that are traveling on by themselves seem to be open game for all sorts of catcalls and things like that. So, you know, I think they're watching too much trash TV over there.
I will say, when I went to Paris for the first time, there was a, and I was 12, 13. My grandfather was born right outside of Paris, Montmorency, and then they fled the war before and Nazis took their house. Like, it was like one of these things. So they fled to New York when he was like 7, and he wanted to take us there when we hit of age. And
yeah,
so
to understand
we
it.
went. Yeah. And it was great. I've been there a couple of times, and we went and the commercial came on and this woman jumps out of the water and she's topless.
Mm-hmm.
And it was some like shampoo commercial.
Right.
And I was like, whoa. And there it's a cultural difference. And you would never obviously see that here, but you're like, this is on like a regular TV station. So when you go, there's so many different things that you're just like, oh.
Yeah, I think you find, you know, the cultural, and I always, you know, and unfortunately streaming has sort of ended that, but I still will flip on local television wherever I go in a foreign country, just because you get a very fast introduction to cultural values and how they think. And you're right. I mean, topless is not considered taboo in France. Nakedness is not considered taboo in Germany. There are parts of parks where people there are encouraged to be nudists, and they doff all their clothes, and it's, you know, it's grandma, the kids. Yeah. I
they're
mean,
all just out because it's not
and
sexual.
Right. No, it's in, not at all. It's enjoying the sun. It's the culture of having your body in fresh air with the sun. It's good in vitamin D and all of these things. And, you know, Americans tend to over fuss about things. I mean, we obsess on crazy stuff to
I agree.
most of your,
Yeah, I was in Sweden and we were at the park and they were on their lunch break and they were sunning topless in the park.
Yeah.
And it was like no big deal. And of course, I was 9 and I was like,
Right.
And then we went to dinner a few years later. My Swedish sister got married. So we went and we were sitting at dinner. We look over, there's like 16 naked men jumping off of a bridge. I think we think it was more like a initiation of some sort.
Yeah, that's probably
It's
what
not
they do
typical,
those
but
things. Yeah.
all out, no big deal. And they're like,
Yeah.
oh, yeah. They'll sauna together and naked.
Yeah.
And no big deal.
No, they've divorced all of those things from,
yeah.
So it's, and again, it's totally different. And then some places in Africa are very conservative, so that you would never dream of showing so much skin as you would in Europe. So
There's laws there too, not there, but some other countries where you have to
no.
wear herbs.
Exactly. You know, it's all very fascinating. And I that points out that, you know, to be a traveler, to be an explorer, is to have an open mind. So you can never come and say, oh, that's terrible what they're doing. It's just thinking, why are they doing it? You know, why and sort of enjoy or embrace the differences, because that's really why, you know, we travel. And I think, you know, good travelers are comfortable with diverse people. They're comfortable with different cultures. They may not always understand it. And, you know, I don't, in Cambodia, I didn't want to eat the pickled duck fetuses.
Oh, God.
I know. I had a friend who did. I was taking a trip down the Mekong, and they had that was considered a great delicacy to take the basically they take, I don't know how they do it, but they kill the developing fetus in the duck egg, so it looks like a little baby duck, and then they pickle it so it turns black, and then you're supposed to peel it and eat the whole thing, and it's just like with a little web foot sticking. It's just, yeah. I know.
I want to try and eat a dog. Like, you just don't.
No, but again, that's the cultural difference, right? So I'm not, do I think that, you know, the Cambodians are barbarians? No, I mean, it's just.
Not for me.
Yeah.
Slightly defined.
Yeah.
Not for me.
Funny. It's a funny, interesting country, beautiful country, beautiful people. Very sad history. In the 1970s, there was genocide where I think some, you know, like half of Cambodians were killed by their government. I mean, millions of people. And, you know, it's, but just so, you know, warm and welcoming. And Siem Reap is the old European colonial, French colonial city in Cambodia near Angkor Wat. And Angkor is amazing. So you need to go see it at sunrise.
Okay.
Right, when the sun's breaking over the stupas and you've just got these banyan tree roots. I don't know if you saw Tomb Raider with Angelina Jolie.
Yeah, banyan tree.
They filmed it there. Yeah, they filmed
it. Okay.
So it's got this colossal, and you're thinking, this is so huge. It's actually visible from space, right? But how did an ancient culture build something so impactful you could see it from space? And, you know, you're just kind of in awe of it, of its beauty. It's beautiful. And I, you know, the thing, again, I just want to encourage everybody when they're reading Here Not There is, you know, you can curl up with it, you know, listen, the kids are in bed, pour yourself a nice glass of wine, curl up and flip through and think about, you know, what it is that you'd like, where you'd like to go and how you'd like to, you know, do it. And if you could, and, you know, I always like to think, like, wow, you know, well, there's that destination. Maybe, you know, there's another destination that would be worthwhile. Like, what's an alternative to the Everglades? So it's Biscayne National Park, which is 80% underwater. So you can actually go reef diving. And it's amazing. They have shipwrecks. You can go and see those. So it's like the old pirates' keys are down there, and it's wonderful. And it's not as far as the Everglades, you know. So a lot of people say they're kind of disappointed with the Everglades. It seems kind of sort. It's very flat, and sometimes it's brown, and it's not when you think of teeming with life. And you know what? You can see alligators in a lot of other places.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Exactly.
But Key Biscayne is one of a kind. It's one of a kind place. Yeah.
And I think too, when you have like such a hot spot, it builds up all this like expectation, and then you're like, oh,
is
like
this
the
it?
Statue of Liberty. Yeah. We went, and my boyfriend had never been, so I went and did like the touristy thing. And I prepared him that when he saw it, it's not going to be as big as you would think. And as every single person was like, I thought she'd be bigger. It's beautiful, awesome, but I thought it would be bigger, not a letdown, but it's just, just preparing, or like, you never know if there's somewhere else that's better.
Well, there's always something that is, there's always something that's better. I think if define it. So, you know, and I also tell people, you know, if you go to a city that is a big tourist place, look for other parts of it to go to. So, for example, you know, people get to LA and where do they go? They go to Venice Beach, Santa Monica, Beverly Hills, and We'll go look to East LA, not West LA. Go back to the 213, not the 310, and go to places like Mount Washington, Highland Park, Eagle Rock. These are where real Angelenos live. They're not in so much as they're in, you know, that's not, they're not fancy places, but they're not poor places either. They're just these really interesting neighborhoods that so many people will never see. And, you know, you can go and see what it's like to really live in LA. Plus, they've got all these secret staircases that are built into the sides of hills. So these were left over from the 1920s before LA was a car culture. LA was stitched together by these big red streetcars. And what happened was, because owning cars were really expensive, but people would take, you know, they'd live on the side of the hill in these like little bungalows, California bungalows, and then they'd actually take the stairs down to the streetcar stop and go to work, come back, climb the stairs up. People did a lot more walking in the day, right? And they were a lot better shape. So
Europe is so healthy.
Yeah, because they walk. They don't, right. They walk everywhere. They take mass transit and they walk. I mean, it's the interesting thing about American cities is that the fattest people are never in the biggest cities, like New York, you know, Chicago, Boston, DC. People walk in those places. So
parking's a nightmare and it's very expensive to own a car.
Yeah, exactly. And it's just more convenient. I mean, I remember where was I? Well, I lived in New York. Oh, and I went to graduate school in Missouri, and Columbia, Missouri, which is a small town, but you needed a car. And I'd come from New York, and it seemed like it took my errands so much longer because I'd have to get in the car,
license?
Drive to the what?
Most New Yorkers don't even have driver's licenses.
Oh, I had one. I was a suburban kid, though. I grew up in suburban Detroit, so got had the license. But it just, you forget that just driving, the very nature of it, takes time. Parking, you know, getting out of the car, going in, and then, you know, if I lived right next to my dry cleaner, right next to my grocery store, you know, boom, 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 I can get it all done. So, so it's those sorts of things. And the other thing is getting your steps in. So,
It makes you healthier. I went to New York and I never took the subway because it was always never great. They get post COVID, they cleaned it up a lot.
Yeah.
I always took cabs, or we never really rented a car if you stay in the city, but we would stay at Long Island and we'd have a car. It's first time I actually took the subway, but also there's apps now. And it was just so much easier to hop on, hop off. You walked. And I was like, public transportation, it's just not everywhere. Austin, we don't have any of it.
Yeah. Nothing. Yeah, I know. And it's too bad about Austin. It's funny, you know, for people who think Austin's gotten too big, I recommend going to Raleigh, North Carolina, because it's small, but it's got the same sort of high energy tech culture with lots of amazing breweries and a great restaurant scene. Did you know that in Raleigh, 50% of the restaurants are owned by women or people of color?
Huh.
So it's got this incredibly diverse selection of food, from Laotian food to Mexican to Indian food. It's really, and of course, barbecue, great barbecue. So just like Austin, I'm sure. But, you know, this is the thing. You can have that kind of experience and great music, nightlife. So it's another town that is on the rise and is smaller and more easily navigable than Austin.
Yeah, Austin has gotten very congested in the crime, and I hate going downtown and all the places. Like, I live in North, so it's hilly. And it's not a lot of people think that it's green and there's breweries and wineries. So you're very pleasantly surprised when you go out of the norm. So I think that this book is a great resource. I really enjoyed it. And thank you so much
for
sharing it. And where can we follow you or find you for my listeners?
Oh, well, I can easily share that information, but I am on Instagram at, Andrew Terrell Nelson. And that's Andrew Terrell, is TYRRELL Nelson.
Okay.
Easy to find. I'm there. You can also, look for me. I write for the Wall Street Journal. I write for National Geographic. I'm doing something associated with the third episode of Bridgerton.
Ooh.
So
the links that you share will be in the show notes to the book. And please check that out and go reach out to Andrew if you have questions, or maybe we'll have him on another time. And thank you for listening to another episode of the Chaos and Cookies podcast. Thank you, Andrew, for being here.
Thank you, Heather, for having me. I enjoyed our talk.
Absolutely. We'll catch you on the next episode of the Chaos and Cookies.
Thank you for listening to the Chaos and Cookies podcast. If you want more goodies and friends to share them with, follow the crumbs to the Facebook group or visit the Chaos and Cookies website to grab my sweet secrets on how to calm your cookies. Don't forget to leave us a 5-star review on iTunes. See y'all next week for another episode of Chaos and Cookies.